Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of Salem History Matters, the show that builds a bridge between the rich history of the Willamette Valley and our contemporary lives. I'm your host, Deb Meagers. Joining me today is our co-host, Christy Van Heukelum. Today we have the pleasure to speak again with David Roten, a lifelong Salemite. David had such interesting things to share, and one program just wasn't enough, and he has agreed to come back for a second episode. We're so happy to have you back with us, David.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Go ahead, Christy.
Thank you. David, in our last time we got together, you mentioned about the Oregon Capitol fire happened when you were 1 year old. And you also mentioned that you were in the service. But in talking to you, you mentioned something unique to me that I didn't know about, and that's that when Pearl Harbor occurred, that the Willamette University football team happened to be there.
Yes. Yes. I was born in 1934, and this is 1941, but I remember very well the Japanese. I was coming home from Sunday school, stopped at my grandmother's, and everybody was in pandemonium because there was this Pearl Harbor attack. And at that time, my folks were very involved, both of them Willamette graduates and all, with the Willamette community. And the football team for Willamette was over at Hawaii on Oahu to play the game, and all of this, and half the city of Salem was over there as audiences for the football game. And so I kept hearing this, my folks talk about how can they get home? Are they in danger? You know, at that point, that first attack, everybody mm-hmm. assumed that other things were going to happen very shortly, and the whole world would be blown up. And so I remember Dr. Zeller and his wife lived just across the street down Church Street from where we were, and they were over there. And so that was quite a deal. But they all came home on freight liners. Freighters coming back. Hmm. The Lurleens and the luxury boats were converted at that point in time, mm-hmm. But they came back, and they brought the team back also.
How did they travel to Hawaii in those days?
And by boat.
Yes, airlines were not as common.
No, Pan Am in the late 40s, after the war, Pan Am was a big deal. But in the early 40s, mm-hmm. The airplane was not a passenger plane at all, and I think they went by boat. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So how did life in Salem change during World War II?
Well, from my microscopic perspective, life was peaceful. Life was comfortable and warm. But I would see my father put on this warden's hat, and I'd see the pails of sand at the front door, anticipating that we were going to get incendiary bombs in the neighborhood, and we'd have to pull the blinds, the black blinds, so mm-hmm. that there would be no light coming from our homes in the neighborhood. But I remember the rationing. During the war, my grandfather had passed away, but he had this dairy farm out on South River Road. And so my father and his law partner, Sam Spierstra, bought the farm from my grandmother and raised turkeys there for the war. There were some 40,000 or more turkeys out on that ranch during the war. And so my mother, you couldn't buy eggs and also my mother would get the extra large turkey eggs and use those for her angel food cakes and things. And we couldn't get shoes during the war we would make butter and margarine, and then we'd make soap. I remember making soap because you couldn't get soap during the war. Mm-hmm. But I was so young that life was pretty good during the 40s, you know.
And I'm sure they tried very hard to make sure that your life didn't have any lumps and bumps during that time.
That's right.
As normal as they could make it for you.
I remember we were in Leslie Pool in the summer, and the sirens started to go off, and that was VJ Day. There was the Japanese had surrendered, and I was in the pool, and it was hot, and nobody knew why those sirens were going off, and it was the VJ Day.
Hmm. Wonderful.
And did you have any friends that got moved away that were Japanese?
You're a good reminder. One of the sad things in the Roten family was that while my father and my mother were high school students at Salem High School, there was also a very large Japanese community out in Lake Labiche, which my father always referred to as the beaver dam soil out there, mm-hmm. and it was peculiarly good for onions. And there were many Japanese families who ran these beautiful, vast farms out there in Lake Labiche. And when the Roosevelt mandate or declaration came to send the Japanese families off to these camps, I remember that the folks, I don't think I went to the railroad station, but I remember they're talking about it and concerned about it. To see, they went down to the Salem train depot to see their friends off to these Japanese replacement or displacement camps. My aunt, Zita, Aunt Zita Lyle, she was about 5 feet tall and maybe 5 feet wide, and she had red hair that I think was enhanced. That's when I first learned what henna was, I think. And she was just absolutely incensed by this. And so she went down to Tule Lake, to the Tule Lake camp, and she taught school down there for during the duration. And my aunt Lucille, her sister, and her husband, Marvin Lewis, and I, and my cousin Justine, we went down there and visited my Aunt Zita. We went through this concentration camp. Here was the first gate and all the barbed wire, and then the second gate with the towers up there, and then we went in to this camp, and here were these families and these students and all, and my aunt was actually living on the Tule Lake Reserve, if that's what you call it. Mm-hmm. But that was a very troublesome time, and from a retrospect standpoint, all of those Japanese farms were lost to foreclosure and all.
Right.
And so at the end of the war, there was nothing really for those families to come back to. Mm. Interestingly enough, Pop had a friend whose name I won't even try to pronounce, but he, after the war, he must have been in the high school. He went up to Seattle, made quite a name for himself, became a very wealthy fellow. And I remember my father thought it was irony because at that point my father was on the board of trustees at Willamette University, and this fellow in his own private jet, dying of cancer at the moment, flew to Willamette University and presented a check of substantial consequence as a contribution to Willamette. And then within a month, he passed away. But that fellow was one of the members of the Japanese family that was out at Lake Labiche.
Oh, my.
Wow.
Yeah, I can't imagine having that. You have an established family, established business, and you always have considered yourself to be American as the next guy, and then had just have someone determine that you're not and pick you up and move you. And
I think there's still some healing going on.
I think there is.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Well, in 1942 through 43, there was a large flood.
Yes.
That hit Salem. What are your memories of that?
Well, I actually remember that enough because there was an ice skating rink in Salem, and there was a recent
Mellow
article
Moon.
About that. Mm-hmm. And I was there, but the skating rink, the ice skating, but the regular skating rink was at the West Salem end of the bridge on the Willamette River. And we would go over there, and the Wurlitzer organ would be playing, and we'd skate. I assume I was, what I was, 5 or 6 or 7 years old. But it was a wonderful place. And then the flood comes, And the farm out on South River Road was flooded, and the flood washed away this big hippodrome, this Mellow Moon skating rink, and the Wurlitzer organ and everything else. And it was just a really devastating thing. And I don't have any recollection of any rejuvenation of a skating rink of any consequence around here since that time, you know. They still, they do some sand and gravel excavating along the river there on the west side, and they still find remnants of the Mellow Moon building in the fields down there.
When we were researching our West Salem book, we found pictures of the Mellow Moon building lodged against the buttresses of the bridge. And it was soon after that flood that they rerouted the river.
Right.
Very interesting time.
Fires have definitely affected Salem throughout the years. We mentioned about the Capitol fire, and we mentioned the Guardian. Mm-hmm. But we've also had the Marion Hotel.
The Marion Hotel was the heart of the world. And the wonderful pictures at the convention center now, going from the hotel lobby back to the convention center, show the progression of the Marion Hotel as it became the Marion Hotel and all until the fire. I remember the families would go down there. There was another hotel called the Argus Hotel, that was when the Guardian building burned, the doctors took over the Argo Hotel. The Argo Hotel had a dining room with white linen tablecloths and breadsticks in the middle of the tables, and we'd go down there for Sunday.
Very European.
Yes, and we'd go down there for Sunday dinner. But we'd also go to the Marion Hotel dining room. And so the Marion Hotel was kind of the hub of everything. Well, when I became a lawyer, I started to get into the peripheral of politics and all. The hotel and the bar at the hotel was the central legislative place where all the decisions of the state legislature were made, as a matter of fact. Velvet Horse Lounge was the name of the bar. And it was a wild place. But I was in Portland. The office would go over there every Friday or whatever for lunch. It was just a wonderful place to go. When I got onto the Oregon Arts Commission, the first meeting that I had with the Oregon Arts Commission was at one of the meeting rooms in the Marion Hotel. Mm-hmm. But I was on a special assignment in Portland, literally living at the Hilton. And I picked up the newspaper at breakfast, and here the Marion Hotel had burned. And that was truly a sad day in the history of Salem. And, they tried to kind of put Humpty Dumpty back together again a little bit with the Black Angus and all, but nothing that really was like the Marion Hotel as it was at that time.
One of the things that I discovered as I was doing a little bit of research on David was that he had a dog that was famous, and his name was Rufus. We had to ask David to share with us the story.
Well, Rufus was wonderful. I'm shocked at how many pictures we have of our family dogs, and Rufus was one of the pinnacles of our dogs at this point in time. But Rufus belonged to another couple who were going to school over in Monmouth, and they really couldn't handle a big dog like that, and so I think the vet suggested that we'd like a dog, and we took the dog. Rufus was a wanderer. He was a huge, big, red golden retriever with a great big head. Wonderful. He'd go down to Willamette Commencement, and he'd go out onto the grass in front of the commencement podium and do his seal thing in front of the entire crowd at Willamette. It was a little disconcerting for the president of Willamette, but that's all right. He went away. The meter maids would call from downtown Salem because it was a hot summer day, and the meter maids took Rufus into their little hideaway and gave him water, and then my wife would have to go down and pick up Rufus. And before Ross was out on Liberty and Commercial was a huge store called Vista Market. And we lived on Madrona, And Rufus would go down and sit in front of the air conditioner door, where the front door and there, and they'd call us and say, come and get Rufus because he's there. He was noted for having received more violations and citations for being an errant dog than anybody else in Marion County. And there's a picture in the newspaper of his receiving this certificate of having more violations than anyway, kind of like my wife and her parking tickets. The same. The notoriety prompted a call from Mill City, and Mill City invited Rufus to be the grand marshal of the Mill City 4th of July parade. So we took Rufus up there, and it was just an absolutely wonderful day, and Rufus just loved it. We led the parade, and Rufus just had a great time.
Yeah, the article that I read about Rufus, your wife consistently tried to do everything to keep him in. I mean, they put him in a big pen. He learned how to open the pen.
Yes.
They put a covering on the pen. He crawled up the sides and got yes. out of the pen.
And mindful, he was a big, I mean, he's kind of like yeah. as big as a St. Bernard, you know.
And at one point, they said he even launched himself off of his doghouse to get out of his pen. I mean, he was definitely not a dog to be kept in his cage.
He was a very, very special dog. And as a matter of fact, we're moving now, and I was picking up stuff to pack up. And here is this beautifully wrapped cellophane and tissue paper little package, all nice and sealed, and I opened it up, and it was Coralie's framed picture of Rufus.
What are some of the biggest changes you've observed during your life here in Salem?
In my life, my goodness sakes, in Salem that I've watched, there are substantial things. When I was a little kid, all of the along Front Street, the railroad was there. It's still there, but they moved it when Bob Lindsay was the mayor. They moved the railroad in a little bit to help with that riverfront park. But in the early days, that was all warehouses, and the warehouse doors would be open, and then you'd see the sheep, a lot of sheep in the valley, and there'd be wool in the warehouses, and the trains would come by and pick it up. And that's all gone now, which is a good thing, because they were pretty eyesores. The same thing is true with Pringle Creek, going from the river up to the Ram, for instance. Mm-hmm. Those were all huge old cannery buildings, mm-hmm. and three or four or five stories. All the windows were broken, and it was a true eyesore. And so the urban renewal people, which was really a controversial thing, cleared those canneries out and added more property to Willamette campus and then on down what we see today that goes down to the river. And, of course, the Boise Cascade and before that the Oregon Pulp and Paper Mill was the huge employer in Salem. Everybody knew the paper mill, worked 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. Magoo's Tavern was the lunch place at midnight for all of the workers off shift. And now the Dekarski renovation of the apartments there is just spectacular change from what it was.
I know you were young, very young when the Capitol burned.
1 year old.
1 year old. One of our episodes, a couple of our episodes, we talked about the rearranging history, the moving of the houses and such along mm-hmm. Capitol Hill, which was then called Piety Hill. Do you remember any of that when they were building the new Capitol buildings and those big family homes, perhaps of your friends being moved?
The
McKays. And
Boyce, everything. And my mother specifically remembers the family. She would have tea there, and she would talk about this gorgeous home demolished and all. I don't have any distinct recollection of it. All I do from an after-the-fact standpoint is that find that instead of the old Capitol facing west, looking at the mm-hmm. Courthouse, the back of the courthouse, they made it facing north and then wiped out this gorgeous part of our community.
To make the mall.
Too bad, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all of those government buildings faced the water, faced the river.
Yeah.
The post office, which is now Gatke Hall
That's
over
right.
at Willamette, all of those
mm-hmm.
faced west at one time. That was That's the original right. platting. for the
and
city.
And I vividly remember the courthouse because my father would take me over there when I was a little kid, and then he'd go up and talk to the judges on the second floor. First floor was all open. And the clerks would be babysitting me, and then they'd put me on the stairwell rail. I could slide up and down the stairwell in the courthouse while Pop was doing whatever he was doing upstairs. And then I'd go around the building, and the jail was on the ground floor, and here are all these inmates looking at me through the bars at the jail.
Do you remember the Christmas lighting over on the
very much, yes. That was extraordinary. It was very good. Mm-hmm. You know, one of the single things that I remember in downtown, the Schaefer's Drugstore next to the Pioneer Trust building was wonderful because Emil Schaefer and his daughter would fix you an ice cream cone and then dip it in chocolate bugs. And then that was the bus stop, the bus corner. And so mm-hmm. I'd sit on the windowsill of the Pioneer Trust Bank building and wait for the bus and eat this thing. But what I remember downtown was a restaurant on Court Street that specialized in Coney Islands. Oh. And I remember going in and the aroma of a Coney Island, I can smell it as I'm speaking here. And I would have a Coney Island with chopped onions on the top. Mm. And I have never had a better Coney Island since that.
Now, the Capitol Tower was one of the main businesses in town when your parents and you were in the downtown area, just as it is now. But it was kind of unique because it was so tall.
Well, I know it as the Livesley Building.
Right.
I actually stutter every time. You know, there are a lot of my friends who have offices there, mm-hmm. and I refer to it as the Livesley Building. And the Livesley family Grandma Livesley lived in the house where is now the governor's mansion.
Omahonia Hall.
This mm-hmm. is all
yes.
Hop money. Mm-hmm. Independence, Oregon, being the hop capital of the world. And the Livesley family were huge hop people, and the old man Livesley built that building, and they lived out there where at the top of Lincoln Street.
Well, that was the tallest building around back then. Was that considered Absolutely. Something very special?
It was extraordinary. It was our skyscraper. I don't think anybody ever measured the Methodist steeple, but apparently that's slightly higher by an inch
mm-hmm,
or two or three.
It is.
But no, that was the center of the world, and it was a big thing. The rumor always has been that it's about a foot into the public right of way on Liberty. Who's going to do anything about that?
Right,
right.
Was the Equitable Center that was built in the much later than that?
Oh yes.
Was it as tall?
I don't think so. It's five stories, and that was during. The time when life was good and the financial institutions were good and they built the Equitable Building. Now, I remember when it was simply a concrete structure with no windows, just concrete floors. I think the Salem Art Association had a benefit banquet up there, and Coralie was running the banquet show, the food mm-hmm. part. And so we had this banquet on the fifth floor. We had to put a fence around it because I think alcohol was served at the dinner mm-hmm. for fear somebody would walk out into the street from the fifth floor of the Equitable Building that was being built at that time.
Do you remember the demolition of the old Marion County Courthouse and the old Salem City Hall?
Oh, yes. I remember it didn't occur to me that was an improvement or not an improvement for the demolition of the Marion County Courthouse. Subsequently, I think it was a terrible thing to happen, and I appreciate Mr. Belushi, the architect, but here is this blocky mm-hmm. Building. And City Hall was really a problem. I mean, I used to practice law in City Hall with the Planning Commission and the Police Department and the Mayor's numbers and the Fire Department. You walk along Court Street, and there would be all these Raj doors with the fire engines at the bottom of City Hall. And I'm so sorry that we lost both of mm-hmm. those buildings because mm-hmm. We could have used them in some other and different way,
right.
You know.
So how do you find Salem different today than when you were young and growing up and when you were first in business?
Well, Salem has gone through this secular thing where the world would characterize Salem as wide streets and narrow minds, and it would all fold up at 5:30 in the evening and all. And I find Salem now to be a vibrant place. I find the Salem government and the council to be really interested in what's going on, and the Historic Preservation Commission, for instance, and the things that are going on. Salem, in fact, in my judgment, is not a provincial backwater, that it's simply the state capital. Mm-hmm. It has wonderful restaurants. The restoration of the Elsinore Theater and then the Grand Theater following, I sang Tiptoe Through the Tulips on the stage of the Grand Theater when I was about 4 years old. But those were when there were a half a dozen or a dozen movie theaters in Salem at that point in time. But the Elsinore was the principal place, and the Capitol, which is now a parking lot, where, you know, Who Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest was the world premiere at the Capitol Theater. We went when the balcony was so awful that your feet would stick on the gum that was the floor. But today, with the magnificence of the Elsinore Theater, with the vitality of the Grand Theater, and the Convention Center, the Grand Hotel. I was just so delighted when the Grand Hotel, it was kind of brought back the Marion Hotel to Salem. Those are the things that are very special. And then where I'm going to be moving to.
Yeah, the rehabilitation of the
McGilchrist Roth
building. Well, we're so happy to know that you find Salem to be as vibrant now as it must have seemed as a child. And you sound very hopeful for our future.
I am, very much so, and I'm glad that my great-grandchildren live here.
We have so enjoyed having you with us and sharing your wonderful memories with us. And we hope that you'll let us bug you again sometime in the future.
Well, I'm really old,
so
I don't know how far the future is. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much.